Now, here's something we apparently missed, but longtime Congress watchers didn't. Earlier this month, a lineup in the Senate press room on Capitol Hill, Democrats and Republicans standing there together showing rare agreement over a comprehensive criminal justice bill. On the left, senators spoke of how the bill would reduce sentences for nonviolent offenders. On the right, Republicans talking about chances to rein in government overreach. "This is the way the system's supposed to work," said the senator standing in the middle. "If your attitude is, I get everything I want or nothing, you'll always get nothing," close quote. The man doing the talking there was John Cornyn, the senior senator from Texas. That remark seen not as a not-so-subtle jab at a fellow Texas senator named Ted Cruz and his all-or-nothing approach when it comes to defunding Planned Parenthood. Well, now, Senator Cornyn thinks he's found bipartisan support for another plan, this one, aimed at the apparent spike in mass shootings. Senator John Cornyn, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you.
I understand that you are traveling the state pushing a measure that is aimed at doing something about the problem with gun violence that folks have been talking about quite a bit of late. What exactly is this Mental Health and Safe Communities Act?
Well, David, I'm a strong supporter of the Second Amendment, but recognizing that the common element in the vast majority of these incidents is the mental health of the shooter, my legislation is trying to find a point of consensus where we can get people the help they need so they can keep from becoming a danger both to themselves and others. And this is something that like I said, a point of consensus. But if people are actually interested in getting something done and finding a solution, I think this is a good start. Unfortunately, some people just want to demagogue the issue and really apparently want to just continue to drive people apart on this important question.
Well, let's back up and talk a little bit about what this would actually do. I've heard you describe it as fixing the existing background check system without expanding it. How so?
Well, one of the problems is that the current background check system that I support doesn't upload all of the relevant information. For example, the states would be incentivized under my bill to upload adjudications of mentally ill individuals like the shooter at Virginia Tech. Strangely and tragically, he had been adjudicated mentally ill by Virginia, but that information had not been put on the FBI's background check system. We'd also create a civil mechanism, a outpatient procedure where family members could seek help for their children, their spouse, people who are obviously exhibiting some signs of mental illness, and get them to comply with their medication and see the doctor in a way that will hopefully keep them from getting sicker and sicker and then even violent. So this provides a number of different programs designed to identify people who are mentally ill as opposed to common criminals and to get them the help they need and to make the background check system we have now work and not infringe the rights of law-abiding citizens.
Senator Cornyn, one of the things I've actually looked at these forms, and you know, you sort of have to self-report if you haven't been adjudicated, and what you're describing certainly would at least go to that point of it. If you haven't been adjudicated mentally ill, it asks you if you misuse drugs, and you have to say yes or no. And if you're going to get a gun, you're going to say no. Same thing for if you've ever suffered from mental illness. And a lot of folks have gone to talk with counselors and psychiatrists. And sort of where do you draw the line? And at what point should we be talking about health records being, you know, part of that background check system? I mean, this could be a slippery slope indeed.
Well, it could be, and that's why we are very careful to make sure that only after a due process, after notice and an opportunity to be heard and evidence is presented to a judge, can an individual be deprived of their Second Amendment rights. This is, after all, a constitutional right and something that we don't want to tamper with. But on the other hand, there's a lot of times when family members know that a member of their family is becoming ill. For example, the mom Adam Lanza's mom in Connecticut, mm-hmm. the terrible tragedy there. She knew he was sick and he was isolating himself, but she didn't have anywhere to turn to get him compliant with his medications to keep him from getting sicker and sicker and then ultimately dangerous. He actually killed her. He didn't buy any of the firearms. She did. But it demonstrates how mental illness so often is the common element that we really need to get at.
This is a bill, as I understand it, that's endorsed by both some mental health groups as well as the NRA. And I think some people might see this as an effort to preempt tougher action on guns by some of your colleagues on the left. Do you sense that, especially in the wake of the Oregon shooting, that there's momentum building on the left for tougher gun control legislation, and this is sort of to sidestep that?
Well, this bill was to actually try to solve the problem and not just demagogue it. We know that legislation has been introduced in the Congress before that cannot pass, because what it does is it tries to address the problem by going after the rights of legitimate gun owners. What this does, the hope is to find that common ground, and that's why, as you point out, it's been endorsed by everybody from the NRA to leading mental health organizations, that actually will help us make progress and provide help to families, give them other choices, so that when they realize that a family member is becoming sicker and sicker and perhaps a danger to themselves and others, they can get the help they need and thus avert some of these terrible tragedies.
Senator, I want to ask you a question, because I mentioned to someone else here that we were going to be talking with you, and this person said that they were at a forum the other night talking about the concealed carry issue on college campuses. And at that forum, someone who was a gun rights supporter mentioned that the concerns, generally speaking, among the public, that we should be seeing this as a mental health issue, not as a gun issue. On the other hand, there are lots of people who see this, they think about the fact that there are tons of countries in the industrialized world. They all have mental health issues, but none have the sort of mass killings that the United States has. How do you answer that when it seems like the variable there is, frankly, the availability of guns?
Well, there are a lot of legitimate gun owners, myself included, that are never going to be a threat to public safety. Really, the only people that are criminals, and obviously we need to go after criminals using our traditional law enforcement methods, and then the people who become mentally ill. These other countries you mentioned, and I know the president and others have mentioned them from time to time, none of them have in their Bill of Rights a right to keep and bear arms, and so many of them have very restrictive access even for law-abiding citizens. But no matter how you restrict access, you're still going to have criminals and other people gain access because of the black market and the like. So while I concede that my legislation doesn't solve all of the problems, I think it solves a substantial part of the problem and represents an opportunity for consensus and coming together and coming up with a solution. You know, the problem is we can have a debate over what everybody wants, either on the right or the left, but unless we find some common ground, which I think this is, then we're never going to solve the problem.
I have to ask you, since we've got you here and we're just about out of time, the House has just approved a measure that would lift the 40-year-old U.S. export ban on crude oil, and now it's on to the Senate. How do you plan to vote? You want to get rid of the ban?
I do. This is an archaic limitation on our ability to export oil. It comes from a time when we were dependent on imports. But as you know, the United States and North America is becoming an energy production powerhouse. And actually, American producers are at a price disadvantage because they can't sell their crude on the open market at world prices. So if we can lift this archaic ban, we can improve the price that that producers get for their product. We can grow jobs. We can put people back to work. And we can improve our national security by giving our allies and friends an alternative source of energy rather than have to depend on dictators like Vladimir Putin.
But I have to follow up there, because, you know, you got more oil supply in the global chain. That's inevitably, won't that drive global prices down? I mean, won't that be bad for a big oil state like Texas?
Well, I mean, eventually when the economy starts picking up again, you'll see the prices go up. But right now you see the Texas producer sells their oil at, you know, roughly a 10% discount because they can't avail themselves of the international market. So what you see, ironically, is an ability for Texas producers and American producers to get more for their product and to sell at the global price. But actually, the supply will, as you point out, help keep global prices relatively constrained and actually gasoline prices low. So I view it as really a win-win.
John Cornyn is the senior senator from Texas, number 2 Republican in the U.S. Senate, his majority whip. Thank you so much for taking time to speak with us, Senator.
Thank you, David. Take care.